Welcome to the Green Team of the Legendarium, the weird little Patreon spinoff of the Legendarium, where we discuss the books and topics our favorite podcasts have gotten around to yet. I'm Little Red Book, and today we are spinning the globe. Tonight, I have with me the Green Team calendar keeper from Germany, Starcast.
Hi.
And I also have with me my fellow romance lover, who must correct me every time I try to pronounce her name. From Australia, Marilia.
Hello. That was fun. You got it right.
We did get it right. We are discussing The Tainted Cup by Robert Jackson Bennett. We've got an arc for it, so some things might have changed upon publishing. What is your overall reaction to this book, Starcast?
I really love this book. I do not know how to explain what I really liked about it, but somehow I just really connected to the book, and it took a while, but in the end I was like, I need the next book.
How about you, Marilia?
I also loved it. I went into this book fairly blind with no prior experience of reading Robert Jackson Bennett. And I hadn't really looked into the synopsis before reading it, so I was sort of pleasantly surprised by how simple the premise was, but how well it was executed.
Okay, wow. So I'm going to be the bad guy.
Always need one of those.
I love the beginning of this book. I love it. It's everything I love. I can't quite explain why, but the end just goes off the rails for me.
I have the exact opposite reaction. I didn't like the beginning, but I like everything starting from part two. I loved.
I liked the whole thing. Just went along with the ride. Went along with it for the ride.
I mean, I enjoyed it. Just the end felt... I felt the book was a little bit too ambitious in what it was trying to do. And I have read so much Sherlock Holmes, and I've just read a lot of that type of genre. Lots of Agatha Christie as well. I'm not saying it was a bad book. That is not what I'm saying. Robert Jackson Bennett is a delightful writer. I love his prose. All of my issues are plot related. And that's just kind of how I felt about it. I'm sorry if, because I enjoyed the book. I don't want to. So like with so many things that I've reviewed, I said, I like this book, but, and that's just kind of how I feel about it. So sorry. Sorry.
This book could actually stand quite well as a standalone on its own. So I find it interesting that you think that it was too ambitious in what it was trying to achieve.
What I would say is that we'll get to it when we get to spoilers, my issues, because they're all at the end of the book. So
fair enough.
How do you feel about the setting?
So I thought that it was really interesting, just the way that the world was described, having such a heavy plant focus, which is not really something that we tend to see a lot of. Like, it wasn't exactly like it was set in a jungle or a forest or anything like that, but the world had so much plant-based things to it. So, like, their houses were decorated, or essentially their walls were made of things like fern paper, which I find really difficult to imagine in my head, but I can... It's leafy of some description. But I quite enjoyed it as something that was different, but I thought that it was quite well created and well described.
I also really liked how it tied into the mystery, all the world building aspects, because that is another thing I have a problem with a lot of other high fantasy murder mysteries, that they don't really lean into it, that it's high fantasy, like that it's taking part in another world. And I just really liked how it kind of all connected together in that sense with the world building and the mystery.
Yeah, I think I've read a couple of books recently where I felt like the world building has just sort of been added in because the author has gone, look, I created this massive, really big world, and here is all of the information about it. By the way, it's got nothing to do with the story. Whereas I felt like this one really, like you said, Star, this one did definitely tie very nicely into the plot and everything that was happening.
So I felt like I was dropped into Japan. And it was Sherlock Holmes in Japan plus, oh my gosh, the movie Pacific Rim. That's what I felt like the story was, which I loved. I loved it. I'm like, imagine if Victorian England was in Japan and you had Sherlock Holmes and you also had giant monsters rising from the ocean. And I loved it. As far as the plant-based thing, like all of the world-building parts all seem to, like you guys said, be very integrated into the story. It wasn't, yeah, like even the political structure, you felt like it was part of the story. It wasn't something that you had to know. It was all something that you had to know to understand how the story was going. Does that make sense?
Mm. Yes.
Yeah.
Where did you get Japan from?
Because of the fern screens that they have, the fern paper screens.
Like, well, that's not only a Japanese thing, I would say.
Well, maybe it's also partly because my parents met in Japan and told me a lot about Japanese culture, and I watch a lot of anime. But you have the paper screens in their houses because of earthquakes. And that's something that they describe in the story.
Okay. Can see it.
Yeah. I haven't really gotten a definite vibe of which culture exactly it was inspired from. I couldn't say it. Like, I am assuming it's probably from, like, East Asian kind of in that realm, but I couldn't say which one exactly. At least I haven't picked up on anything.
No, I don't think I have either. And I mean, to be honest, when I read books, I don't really try and work out what sort of culture the books have been inspired by most of the time, unless they're glaringly obvious.
Yeah. Well, like I said, it was mostly like they had buildings built out of screens that they moved around, which if you, like I said, watch a lot of Japanese anime, they have a lot of that going on.
Yeah, but I'm curious, did you think it was also similar to Attack on Titan? Because I have seen a lot of reviews that kind of compared it to that.
I have not watched that.
Okay, I only have watched the first three episodes or something, so I can't comment either on it.
Yeah, no, I have seen Pacific Rim and giant monsters coming out of the seas and breaking down walls is very Pacific Rim.
I've only seen parts of Pacific Rim and with no audio.
Oh, you should. It is like 90 minutes of pure nonsense, and it's so fun.
I haven't seen Attack on Titan either, so I can't really compare.
So, contrast. What do you guys think about the magic system?
I really like the magic system, but at the same time, it would be a magic system where I would be like, nope, I'm gone. I'm gone. In the sense of, I have a fear of parasites. Like,
oh no,
I hate them. There's a story from my school years where we had to watch a documentary about parasites, and most of time I was like sitting there with my hands over my eyes because I was like, I just can't see it. I hate it. Like, everything that has to do with parasites and wounds, it's like, oh no.
Somebody watched Alien when they were too young.
Not Alien.
I'm teasing you, Star. I don't mean that.
But it is true that I was traumatized by a horror movie when I was a child. It wasn't about parasites. It was about darkness, but still.
I mean, Alien is a horror movie. I kind of feel like I enjoy it. I enjoy the magic system, but I kind of feel like this magic system is pushing into sci-fi as opposed to magic.
I agree. Do you want to keep going? I felt like there wasn't actually any magic as such, but more so the use of like technological advancements and alchemy-based systems rather than actual magic. There wasn't anything that was kind of mystical and couldn't necessarily be described or explained otherwise, which is how I perceive magic to be, kind of like an innate ability that you have or something that's coming from within the world that can't necessarily be explained because it's just there, whereas these are kind of utilizing elements that are within the world to evolve, to change, to apply science to, and then change it into something different.
It felt so very...
Keep going.
I was going to say, it felt very transhuman, like the idea of implanting things in your brain. And
yeah.
So basically, they take drugs or something. It's never really quite explained. But unlike the Divine Cities, is that what the series is called? The three books, where there's definitely a mystical element, it does not feel mystical. It feels very soft sci-fi, but much more rooted in the natural world. Even like the Leviathans, their blood creates weird contagions, but that seems natural to that world. It doesn't feel mystical to me. I don't know.
I agree. I mean, I didn't feel like I was reading anything that suggested there was specifically magic in the world, but the magic system was very science-based, technology-based, and how do we use elements from something like the Leviathan and use it to our advantage?
Well, I think that really... it connects really great to the next question we have.
We've already discussed that. Yeah, it definitely did.
Yeah,
because I have something to add to that. But I wanted to wait until the question. But I can just say it now. I'm going to guess. Because I wouldn't even say that it's really sci-fantasy. Because it kind of lacks the element of space for me, if that makes sense. Like, when I think about sci fantasy, I think about a fantasy world where there is also space exploration, or that there are aliens, or some kind of otherworldly thing on the world. And I didn't feel really that it was present here, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I don't necessarily need sci-fi to have space and space exploration and space travel, but rather the use. I suppose I sort of use sci-fi as a way to kind of where people are trying to use technologies that don't actually exist in our world that are kind of almost futuristic.
Yeah, so I would say Frankenstein is sci-fi, not fantasy. For example, 2,000 or 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea is sci-fi. Probably Fahrenheit 451 would count. Terminator, for a movie, definitely counts, and there's no space in that.
Yeah, but I'm not talking about science fiction itself, more like the subcategory of sci-fantasy.
Oh, well, I don't even know what to say.
I mean, I've always considered science fantasy or sci-fantasy to be a combination of sci-fi and fantasy. Mm. Where they sort of overlap each other, but it doesn't necessarily have to have space travel.
So I'd say some of the things in the Cosmere would qualify as that.
Yeah, it would qualify.
Yeah, like Mistborn does it, and so does Sixth of the Dawn. I'm trying to remember it. Sixth of the something. It's one of his short stories would qualify.
Maybe it could be. I just can't really remember any example that I can remember where a book is sci-fantasy and didn't really use some kind of space exploration or some kind of aliens or whatever to achieve that genre. I mean,
the Broken Earth trilogy doesn't really, like, the only space they refer to.
That's a big spoiler,
example. But I.
Yeah, that's
a oh no! Oh no! I'm gonna have to bleep it all.
Yeah, I would say that would be a very good example of that.
Yeah,
for sure. Okay, so now we're gonna rate our books. Our books. All of her books. Rate all of your books.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
So rate this book.
Give it a 5. But I'm very lenient when I give things 5s. Yeah. If I've genuinely enjoyed it and I don't have a lot of criticisms of the book personally, then I'll generally give it a 5. Especially if it's captured my attention for the whole read.
Half stars, only because it took a bit in the beginning, but I don't really have any other complaints.
Okay, so I'm giving it a 3.5 because I'm a bad person. No, I there are many books that I have read that I have given 2.5 and loved. So I want everybody within the sound of my voice to understand that this does not mean I did not enjoy the book. I'm giving it a 3.5 because I have some big, big problems with the end. But it was very enjoyable. So now we're going to enter spoilers. And I'm going to warn everyone, once again, I'm very bad at reading out loud. So Dionys Cole, a newly minted apprentice investigator, and his eccentric commanding officer, Anna DeLabra, have a murder mystery fall in their lap. While Den goes out into the world to engrave the crime scenes into his memory, Anna sits at home in her blindfold and makes astounding leaps of logic, connecting dots in completely unexpected ways. They discover not one, not two, but three intertwining conspiracies, which are propelled by different but interconnected actors. A High House Lord's land grab, a personal vendetta for a continent's whatever their province's destruction, and a disillusioned investigator's revenge on the system. In the end, justice is served, or at least some corruption is rooted out. And Dan gets a nice little romantic reprieve, then on to the next job. So, what do you think about the relationship between Anne and Dan?
I found Anna to be a bit of a mystery in and of herself. So, I mean, it was nice to see that she had some ulterior motives that were explained very towards the end of the book, which kind of led her to choosing Din as her apprentice, because he was also a little bit of a mystery at the start, because there was all these allusions to him having done something particularly bad in his training process. That wasn't really explored until about the middle of the book. And then Anna's quirkiness, I think, was very much like they kind of worked well together, because Din was so concerned with getting caught out from whatever it was that he had done previously.
This is spoilers. We could just say what he was caught out for.
So what... what he was being caught out for, essentially stealing his exam and copying and reading it, learning it beforehand, remembering it, and then basically just rote learning the answers to it. But then Anna specifically chose him because he did that.
Mm-hmm.
And discovering that she knew the entire time that Din couldn't read, I felt was quite natural. Because of Anna's quirkiness to begin. Like, I don't know that she ever necessarily felt like a poor mentor, but she was very much one of those characters that has her own secrets and keeps her secrets close, which may or may not be to the detriment of the learning process of the other character.
She is definitely morally ambiguous. Like, she is not ashamed to say, oh, I just lied. I just lied about that.
Oh, by the way, I need you to go and mess up this crime scene.
Right.
Plant our own evidence, make it look fake. Make it look real, but it was actually fake.
She's definitely, there's at least two confessions she gets out of people because she lies about what she actually knows. She says, oh, I know this. And she doesn't. She's just guessing.
Although I think there is an element of, I mean, it doesn't really work in our legal society, I would say. But it's, I suppose, one of the psychological methods to get someone to actually confess by seeming like you know more than what you actually do know.
Okay, Star, what do you think?
Well, I would have just said to this, I think most people are clever enough, or well, now enough about legal things that they know they should never say anything.
I think you really overestimate most people.
Like, okay, please. For whatever reason, if you are taken by the police, never tell them anything and always request a lawyer.
Yes. That's your way. Yes.
Educational program here.
So we're just totally giving legal advice.
We're not lawyers.
No, none of us are lawyers.
Where's Arrow when you need him? I love how she is so, like, very extroverted, even though she stays in her house all the time, and he's, like, super cloistered in himself, kind of. Like, she even says to him at one point, "Can I get you to answer in more than 10 words?" She's like, and he's like, "What, ma'am?"
I mean, I sort of perceive that because he is actually really good at his job as an investigator.
Yes. Yeah, yes.
And I feel like there is an element of being on the spectrum where your social cues are not quite as good, but you can perceive a lot in the world going around you.
I don't think he's on the spectrum. I just think that he's so self-contained. And also he's hiding this huge secret, which is that he can't read. And he's very, very afraid. And also he's really into rules. Like, I was that way as a very young person. I was like into the rules. I just follow. I'm following the rules. Not so much anymore because I pass all the time now. So...
Gotta bleep that one out.
I will. I actually have a bleep saved on my computer. But the point is that... I'm sorry.
I thought maybe Anna was on the spectrum because towards the end of the book, she said that her enhancement only worked for her because she's the way she is.
Yes, yes.
I thought maybe it referred that she's on the spectrum because, like, she always has her blindfold on, and I kind of connected it to what's the word? Sensory overload.
Yep, for sure.
Note, and also the leaps of logic she made. I also thought that could be because she's on the spectrum. Maybe that's the thing that she has enhanced somehow with her enhancement.
Right. We know she has some. We don't know exactly what it is.
They could both be on the spectrum, but in different sides. There's a big spectrum.
I mean, and then we're all on the spectrum, aren't we? A little bit. There was something else I was going to ask that was just on the top of mind. So do you think she's actually augmented? And do you think the augmentation she has is described in the book? Because I think
there was a line where she said that she wasn't augmented, but then she said that she was. And it was a little bit confusing because in one part she was like, "I have no enhancements." But then she was saying that she actually does have an enhancement. So I got a little bit confused as to whether or not she is actually enhanced or not.
I think she... Well, we know her fingers are probably enhanced. Because remember, they're...
She can read with her fingers.
Right, exactly. She can read written word with her fingers. And yeah, and she talks about being... she self-creates. Or something like that we all self create ourselves, and the enhancements are just part of that. Something along those lines. I didn't write it down. But anyway, do you have a thought, Star?
I honestly think we have not enough information in the first book to really say anything because, like, there are. You could make leaps of logic like Anna did, but I don't think we have, I really don't think we have enough information in this book.
I think that's fair. I'm with Marilee. I'm kind of like, I'm not sure. I think we all kind of agree is what I'm saying. Okay, so I'm going to be completely honest. I never try and solve mysteries while reading it. It's just not my thing. but I have mixed feelings about this portion of the story. Do you buy Anna's leaps of logic per the story?
I honestly really like the mystery portion of this book. And I didn't really think... Okay. I really tried not to think about how the mystery was built in this book, because that's a thing that kind of ruins my experience. But I didn't really think about Anna's leaps of logic. So I would be interested to know some examples, because from the top of my head, I can't really say what you're referring to.
Figures out part of who the bad guy is because she makes Den go around to all the prostitutes' houses and talk to the prostitutes and figure out who's sleeping with who. That was this book, right? Or was that another book I was reading at the same time?
They weren't prostitutes. I think they were just fellow soldiers.
Oh yeah, they were fellow infantrymen or whatnot. Yeah. So that was that one. I understood. I also understood. The thing about how she connected all the different provinces together with the maps and the hawks and the other stories and where the secretaries were going. Like, that made sense. Even the part where they figured out that the one chick was the murderer because she was from the province that died, and they figured out her partner because he was also from the same province. All that stuff made sense. This is where I get mad. The other engraver, the engraver that's buddies or whatever, he's part of the investigation. And she just, because he says he's going to go live in the first circle, she just figures out that he's got paid off or something, and that's why he's part of this cabal with the two Oipei people. And I'm just like, no, I'm sorry. No.
There were suggestions that he was involved right from the start, and there was that question mark that he had, that she had hanging over their head, saying, was this investigation that should have been completed adequately just incompetence, or was it complicity? Were they complicit in the crimes, or are they just completely incompetent at their job of investigating?
Well, I don't think it was incompetence. It was that they all happened to be at this party together, and how would they know that the party also involved, because there was a bunch of other people that were disqualified from the investigation because there was this murder that comes out 13 days after the party.
But I think that it was before even that occurred. It was her question of why were these murders not investigated more strongly? Why was the breach at the wall not investigated more heavily? That's his job. He is the investigator of this canton, province, area. Why was this investigation so sort of brushed over, and they didn't really have any answers when Anna and Din arrived and started their own investigation?
I also thought when he said that he was moving to the first circle, I was like, that's suspicious. Isn't the first circle very expensive?
Well, I just
get the money.
I was just thinking that, I mean, you could say you're doing that. Doesn't mean you're actually doing it. Was my thought. I'm like, I'm, you know what? I am moving to I don't know, Beverly Hills. I'm moving to Beverly Hills, guys. Just so you know.
Greg paying you.
Not enough. That's what I'm saying. It's like that part I just kind of blew off a little bit. And maybe you guys can convince me. Because like I say, I don't generally try and solve the mystery while I'm reading it. I'm just there. And there was
I mean, going into this book and realizing that it was a bit of a murder mystery, I kind of had the thoughts in the back of my head thinking, what do I know? It made me kind of look at the evidence that was given to us a little bit more strongly, but we were never given enough information to actually solve the mystery ourselves, because a lot of that information is world-building history, knowledge that Anna has of the world that she used to actually make these leaps. So, for instance, she worked out that Dapplegloss was the key ingredient for all of these murders because of a flower that Din had seen at the crime scene.
Yep. And see,
which is not something that we would ever have been exposed to previously. Right. We hadn't been exposed to.
And this makes it very much in the vein of Sherlock Holmes, who always has a card up his sleeve and pulls it out at the end.
Yeah, but I really like this kind of balance here. Like, there were things that we could figure out, but there were also a lot of things we couldn't figure out. But like, there was kind of a balance here, I thought, of things we could figure out and things we couldn't.
I think so. I think I got to the point where I was looking at who they suspected was actually the murderer, which was Captain Joel Gogan. From Oi Pat.
Part of why I thought Japanese, because of the way a lot of the names sound.
I was like, is she a red herring? Or is she, because it's just so convenient for her to be involved? Which, in a way, she kind of was, because she was involved. Yes, she was responsible for the murders, but she wasn't the mastermind behind everything.
Except she was the mastermind about assassinating her personal enemies. She even stole what's his face? The first dead person stole the cure, and she stole the cure from him or something. And sound like an idiot. And she used the cure to control the Dapplegloss so that it wouldn't get out of control. It could only kill once. Right?
I thought, didn't she plan it with, what's his name? With the investigator. I thought she planned everything with the investigator. Like, they were in a group together. Her, the other one who's from that canton, and the investigator, they all three were together, and they planned everything together.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I thought it wasn't like she was the mastermind, and more like the three of them worked together and had kind of
different
equal
goals,
parts
maybe?
Of it together.
Different goals.
I think she was used as almost like a little bit of a scapegoat, because she had sufficient motive. She had sufficient connection to the murder weapon.
So what I'm going to say is that Udon and the other two people from that one canton. They all had a common goal. And when things went wrong, Udon was like, no, I'm going to scapegoat you guys and pretend like I wasn't actually part of it.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And this is part of why I say the book is a little bit over ambitious. It needs to be longer if they're going to have this many interconnecting plots. It needs to be about... And I'm on a podcast called Wordless, okay? I'm telling you, this book needs to be about 200 words longer. There's a little too much going on at the end.
I can maybe see that. Like, I do remember when Udon?
I think that's his name, yeah.
when Udon was revealed, I was a little bit taken aback because I didn't expect it at all.
And it is literally out of nowhere. Out of nowhere. Well,
in hindsight, it makes sense, I would say. But when
I read it twice. Everything else I can see coming. That thing? No. I don't buy it.
His name is Uhad.
Uhad.
Uhad. Udon.
Those are noodles. Merely, I was just tired of us all sounding like idiots. We're like, that one character.
To go and find his name. It wasn't Udon, because he's not a set of noodles.
Although I do really love Udon. It's good. Okay, so I think we're just beating a dead horse at this point, but now you guys all know why it's not a higher than a 3.5 for me. Okay. So, do you guys have any favorite scenes?
I think it's kind of obvious for me. Like, every scene, wait, what's his name? I specifically wrote it.
This whole podcast is going to be, what's his name?
Okay.
Typical fantasy names. Yes.
I loved every scene with K, Forrest, and Din. Like the moment I saw K, Forrest, I was like, there's something in the bush between them. I just know it. And every time they were together, I was like, please give me something, anything.
Good. And so, you got your nice little romantic reprieve.
Yeah.
I really loved the last few sentences of the last interaction.
Mm-hmm.
I won't read it because, oh boy, no. That would be a little bit awkward.
Pretty tame.
No, I mean it in the sense of my skills, reading skills. Like, I would be surprised if you even understood what I said.
Yeah, I personally wasn't really a fan of that particular relationship because I kind of felt like, I don't know whether I missed something, but I was kind of just like, oh, okay, that happened.
Oh, it's so projected. You missed something. I'm sorry. You just missed something.
I must have missed something.
When are they going to get together? Is what I was thinking. Like maybe after their second interaction?
I mean, I realized that they were going to get together, but I kind of felt like it was forced.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That's fair.
Well, they didn't really get together. It was more like a
friends with benefits.
Yes. Yes. But my hope is in the next few books, please, give us more K-boys. I really like him.
No, he was fun. He was a fun little character. Yeah. I can see where both of you are coming from. It like I said, it felt like, okay, so we have this moment in time and we're going to hook up for this moment in time.
Yeah.
So, I think my favorite scene is between the fight outside the mill and where he learns to unlock the sword from the sheath. And I just thought it was really cool, like how it describes how his muscle memory works.
I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah. Also, speaking of the mill, the aftermath of that, where K-Force and Nidin, they're not talking, and K-Force is kind of concerned about him, but also in awe of him.
Like, how many outside are yours?
It's just like when you mentioned the mill, my first thought was, oh, the K-Files in the scene.
Like, I'm in love.
He killed all those people, which is kind of weird and creepy, but okay, you get it. How about you, Marilyn?
So my favorite scene is probably a little bit more simple, but it's one of Anna's scenes where she basically empties out her trunk and then jumps in it and closes it on herself. She can think.
This book has a lot of really genuinely funny moments in it.
Yeah, but it's also kind of relatable in a sense, because what I did as a child, we had a desk in the workroom for my parents, and it had a really small alcove.
Mm-hmm.
Cough in under it, and when I needed alone time, I always pressed into that small alcove and just sit there and like and either read or something.
Mm-hmm.
Because it kind of felt comfortable. Like it kind of felt calming. So I could really relate to Anna in that moment.
So I have two kind of similar stories. One is that where the couch used to be in my house when I was growing up, my dog's bed was behind it. And I would crawl up with her behind the couch. So I was kind of just like, you know, the space with her and me and the book. And nobody could really see me and I would relax. The other thing that is kind of similar is that the attic has a walkway that goes from one bedroom to the other. And so my sister and I used to play Secret Passage, even though everybody in the house knew it was there. So I can totally, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I just thought that particular scene, the imagery of it, I mean, it kind of reminded me a little bit of, you know, those scenes where you see the vampires hopping in their coffins to go to sleep.
Yeah.
Are you saying that she's a vampire?
Maybe.
That's her augmentation.
But it also reminded me of the stories from people who climbed into their closet. That story I've heard multiple times, or in general, just Narnia kind of.
Yeah, and look, I think it fit with her character and gave her a lot of, character building to let us understand her a little bit more, and the fact that she needed, I mean, every interaction that we sort of had with her was talking about this hypersensitivity, sensory overload that she has, and the reason that she stays blindfolded, and for her to be able to think, she basically just like locks herself away in an area that's going to be quiet and silent and dead, and nothing else is going on around her. And I thought that was just the best.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I just really like the fact that Den goes out into the world and is like over sensitized. Like he has like all the, he has to take in everything around him, where she has to, in order to do her work, she has to be super closed in. So
I just thought he is his eye, her eyes and ears.
Yeah. I just thought it was literally. Yes. I just thought it was a really, their character dynamic was just a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. I also thought they really complimented each other in the investigation style, because I think in the beginning Din also said that it at the end of part one, where the other one, the other investigator asked him if it would have been better if Anna was there, And he said, no, it would have definitely not been better. And then the chapter after that, I think you just see how Anna has talked for hours with that one person and absolutely emotionally destroyed her.
He mouths, help me. And then afterwards, Din scolds her and was like,
yeah. And Din's just thought process is like, oh no, she's done it again, trapped another one.
Well, if you had been here, I wouldn't have done it. So great. So who would you recommend this book to?
Everyone who wants a high fantasy murder mystery with a teeny tiny bit of queerness.
Yeah.
I don't even think you need to throw the queerness part into it. Like, I would just recommend it to anybody who likes murder mysteries and fantasy or sci-fi. It happens to have queerness, then that's fine. But you don't need to, like, want that specifically to enjoy this story.
I think I would agree.
Yeah.
Murder mystery, definitely key. But even if you don't really like murder mysteries, I still think it's a fun book to read.
Yeah, it has a lot of fun moments. It's, it just has a lot of fun moments. And if you like Robert Jackson Bennett, it's a little bit different than his last series, but I think you would like him. He's a really fun author, even though the end, I've already complained, so I won't anymore.
I was reading something in the acknowledgements. Let me find it. There was something that he said in the acknowledgements where he basically said he wanted to write a murder mystery. And then what he handed into his editor basically said no. So he had to start again.
Oh, no. I mean, aren't the other books, The Divine Cities, are kind of murder mysteries, aren't they? They're definitely kind of mysteries.
I think he said in one interview that there were more like spy novels.
Okay, that's fair.
Said, I'd had the idea of writing a fun murder mystery novel for a while, and that I sat down and pumped out something that was very decisively not a murder mystery novel. And his editor, Julian, helped him realise that. And so he then had to go through the rather tempestuous process of chucking it in the garbage and starting over.
Love it. I also really enjoy the dedication. He dedicates it to his mother and grandmother for giving him the love of a mystery novel. You can just see little him sitting there with his Agatha Christie novels. Anything else you guys want to add?
Yes, I really, really hope we get the next book really quickly. I know it just got out, I know, but I have heard in an interview that he has finished the first draft of the second book and has written a few pages of book three. So my hopes are maybe next year.
I think that's a fair hope.
Yeah, I actually thought that this book would actually stand quite well on its own as a standalone, but it does give you that little hint that there's something more coming for Din and Anna, the way that it sort of ends. Well, and how the reveals about Anna and her motives and everything like that.
Mm-hmm. And the previous assistant.
Yes. Right, yes. And they're going to go visit, like, whatever the grand poobah, like, big guy person who runs there.
Who's so gigantic because he gains size every year.
Yeah, he never gets older, but he keeps growing. Yeah. So they're going to go see him. So there's also that hint that there's going to be something else. And also she says, do you think it was an accident that I ended up here?
Yeah.
At this particular moment?
Yeah.
No, I... Even though I complained about some of the stuff about this book, I really enjoyed it, and I really am looking forward to another book. Everything I've read by him, I've loved, and And this is right my wheelhouse. I love like Victorian era mystery nonsense.
So I think one of the things that I really enjoyed about this book as well is just how diverse the characters were. So they all had their own voice, their own personality. They were very distinct from each other. And unlike some of the books that I have been reading, some of the romance books, where I think there's a meme that goes around on social media where it's just like your romance books and there's these two characters and the female protagonist has to choose between them. One's got blonde hair, one's got dark hair. They're actually the same person.
That is so true. Like, he does write really distinct characters. Like, everybody has their own motivation, their own personality, their own voice. I would recommend the audiobook because I have now read it. So, and it doesn't change a lot from the arc, by the way.
That also reminds me of the one meme with the two pictures, and the woman asked, find a different, where's the difference between the two pictures? And the woman says, that there's no difference. It's the same two pictures.
Oh, yes. Yes, that's from The Office. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the same picture.
Whereas, each character in this book has their own flair, their own quirks, their own personality. There's not two characters that are the same.
Yep.
In this book.
But also in defense of romance novels, sometimes you just
need 100%. There is a reason why there are people who go to the grocery store section with the books and just buy a basket full of romance novels, because sometimes you just need that.
Yep. And like I'm a romance reader, so you know, I don't mind. I do mind when they start talking about love triangles and they're not actually triangles, but that's a story for another day. But I do like the fact that these characters are actually distinct from each other, significantly more so than just one's good, one's bad, one's light, one's dark. One has the powers of light and dark.
And the other one turns into a werewolf. But you know what? This is not a romance novel. It just has a nice little romantic reprieve on the side.
But they have really good characters.
They do.
It's not necessarily a character-driven novel, but it's the characters are really well fleshed out.
Yeah, exactly. So I say we all recommend this book. Okay. Thank you so much for joining us. Please consider supporting The Legendarium on Patreon. Thank you, Craig, for loaning us a little corner of your media empire. And Horizon Brave for starting it all. For Starcast and Merlier, I'm Little Red Book. Good night, y'all.
Bye.